Slavoj Žižek is the wild man of philosophy, or perhaps, as the Telegraph in London recently called him, the world's hippest philosopher. A native of Slovenia, he's president of the Society for Theoretical Psychoanalysis in Ljubljana and a professor at the University of London. But professor hardly begins to describe Žižek. In academic circles, he's a superstar and all-around provocateur. Žižek is a Marxist who infuriates many other Marxists. And for those not on the left, well, the New Republic called him the most dangerous philosopher in the West. Now, it so happens that Slavoj Žižek is fascinated by apocalyptic thinking. He's just written a book called Living in the End Times. Steve Paulson sat down with Žižek for a freewheeling conversation, talking about the hidden atheism of Christianity, the danger of poets in power, and the inherent limits of capitalism and liberal democracy.
I ask myself a simple question. Can this system survive in the long terms, or are there some ominous signs which point towards antagonisms which sooner or later will reach a certain end point? And my hypothesis is, yes, there are such antagonisms. And I think the most ominous trend, it's not only about anti-immigrant politics, it's a much wider problem about identity in our global world, and a new class of, let's call them excluded people, people who are somehow second-rate citizens from those who live in slums and so on, which is introducing slowly in our countries the logic of a kind of a silent but permanent civil war, where you get from time to time these apparently irrational explosions, like you remember a couple of years ago in France when youth, not even gangs, thousands of them, were burning cars in Paris suburbs.
Right,
and how
right.
totally helpless. So, listen, all I'm saying is this. If you try to build an image of the future, where we are heading, I claim we are approaching some kind of a zero point.
Let me ask you about one phrase you use. You say that we are living in a post-political age. What do you mean by that?
I see one rather catastrophic tendency after 1990. The political conflicts are more and more, at least in the developed countries, transformed into or perceived as cultural problems. Like if you talk, at least in the degenerate circles where I move, academics and so on, for example, for them, the problem of racism or sexism is not an eminently political problem, but it's mostly a problem of cultural tolerance, you know, all these boring topics. Why don't we tolerate the others? Let me give you what I think a proof of this tendency to culturalize politics. I checked online all speeches by Martin Luther King. You practically don't find the word tolerance in his writings. For him, it would have been humiliating to claim we blacks want more tolerance or whatever, no? Racism becomes an issue of tolerance when you depoliticize it, when the problem is no longer as it was for Martin Luther King, economic inequality, legal status, but it becomes a problem of cultural tolerance and so on. So then, of course, all you can do is say, let's tolerate each other.
Let me jump in here, and I want to come back to the idea of end times, because, of course, that phrase is usually used in a religious context, referring to the biblical prophecies of the coming apocalypse. And I know you are very interested in religion, even though, as far as I can tell, you're an atheist.
1,000% atheist.
And yet,
you seem
to be very attracted to Christianity. In fact, you have called yourself at times a Christian materialist.
Or a Christian atheist, whatever. but I wrote 3 books about Christianity where I read Christianity as not only an atheist religion in its radical core, but as a necessary step for being an atheist today. The message of Christianity is for me something very precise. It all begins with, I think, the most maybe subversive text in the entire history of religions, in the Old Testament, the Book of Job. You know what's the message of the Book of Job? Job protests, not that he's innocent, but that his suffering doesn't have any meaning. in contrast to the three idiots, theological friends, who came to comfort him, and each of them is basically telling Job, no, no, your suffering has some meaning, maybe you did some blah, blah. Then God comes and tells Job, no, you are right, the three idiots are wrong. It has no meaning. Then when Job asks God, but then, okay. Now, I know on the radio you don't say dirty words, so I will say, okay, four-letter word, up. Why then did this happen to me? And you know what God basically says is, it's extraordinary if you read it really closely. What God basically says is, listen, you think you are in deep S, 3 points. Don't you see the creation? Everything is a big mess. Like, God in a way concedes his own confusion. There is no order. And I think the death of Christ confirmed this. As Hegel, my favorite philosopher, put it, the death of Christ is the death of God himself.
So it sounds like you're saying that we had to go through this Christian history. And,
absolutely.
And your
the only way to be an atheist is to go through Christianity.
And in your definition, the particular version of Christian history where Christ dies, and only then can we come to sort of the sense of common humanity, except for you're saying, you know, forget about any kind of divine rapture at the end.
Yeah. It means, for me, the death of Christ and the arrival of Holy Ghost, it means we don't have any guarantee in some big other destiny, historical necessity. We are left alone. We only can build Holy Ghost, which means an emancipatory community.
Now, you are a philosopher, and quite a famous philosopher at that, but I have to ask...
Más o menos, as they say it in Spanish, more or less.
Now, some people would say philosophy, more than anything, should offer some wisdom for how to live, even how to be
happy. I'm opposed to wisdom. Here I am Christian. No.
My God, this is not the job of philosophy.
In my Stalinist universe, you know, people like to accuse me, like the New Republic idiots, of being a covert Stalinist. Okay, so I have to live up to this reputation, no? In my gulag, when I take power, you know, people like Alain de Botton and all these wisdom philosophers, no? They are the first to disappear in gulag. Not just re-education gulag.
Plato wanted to banish the artists. You're going to banish the happy philosophers.
My thesis is quite seriously. There is no ethnic cleansing without a poet behind laying the ground for it. It's easy to laugh at Radovan Karadzic. All nations have people like Karadzic, not so brutal. Even to look at other cases of ethnic cleansing, and I always discovered a Karadzic behind, like you remember Tutsi, Hutu, 10 years ago, or when it was.
In Rwanda.
Ah, there is a poet behind. Who in a local literary journal for 10 years was systematically spreading ethnic hatred and so on and so on. To avoid a misunderstanding, I admire tremendously great poets. But also we should be aware how poets can also play a very dark role in every ethnic cleansing or violence. You know, people have a certain minimum of decency. Like, let's be frank. If somebody would tell me, rape your daughter and take a knife and take out your eyes, I would have found it a little bit difficult to do.
I hope so.
So what you need is a strong national mythic religious motivation. A very strong story should be told to you. No? Here the poets enter.
And what about the philosophers, then? What's the role of...
Poets are much worse here. I think the philosophers do nonetheless a little bit better. Beware of poets in power. This is why, in my text on ex-Yugoslav war, I said that we in Balkan are in a much worse position than you in the States or in the West. You have the so-called industrial military complex. We have a poetic military complex. Poets and military. The collision between them is much more dangerous than the industrial military complex.
Slavoj Žižek is a Slovenian philosopher and the author of Living in the End Times. He spoke with Steve Paulson.